And we are back with episode 368 of The Critical Myth. I am John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, or at least that's my name until this girl in a flower dress gives me a new one.
That's right. Oh boy, we are going to be trying to play catch-up still after all this time. And, well, there's at least some shows that we've managed to make some ground on, and we're going to go ahead and get started there while we're waiting for Gary to catch up with us. And why don't we go ahead and start with a show that probably represents the low point for us this week. But first, you know what we should probably have? A disclaimer.
Sure. As always, will discuss absolutely anything we want to about these shows, so you must be warned that you will be spoiled. Especially in this current deluge we're dealing with, it may have been a while since these have actually aired, so we certainly hope you've had time to catch up.
That's right. And here's a show that, boy, if you caught up with it just like we did, you're probably just as angry at the way that things turned out. Let's go ahead and run the promo for this episode of Homeland.
Saul's not talking to me anymore, so you have to.
What do you want me to tell him?
I give up. I can't stand another second in this place.
You're out.
I can go.
How the hell did that happen?
The furlough's only good for 24 hours, so...
Listen to what the man has to say.
She's vulnerable right now. She could be saying anything to anybody.
Find her.
I'm not a traitor.
What you are is a liability to a lot of people who've got a lot to lose.
What are you doing here?
Saul's not talking to me anymore, so you have to.
What do you want me to tell him?
I give up. I can't stand another second in this place.
All right, and that is Homeland Season 3, Episode 4, Game On. Carrie meets a new client over breakfast and learns that the crippled CIA can still exercise power when needed. Meanwhile, Dana runs away and Jessica seeks the police's help in finding her. And Saul follows the money trail to an unexpected location. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Well, should we just maybe cut to the chase on this one?
Yeah, I think we have to.
I think we have to. So,
because that's basically what changed everything, regardless of what went before.
That's right. Okay, so let's just call this one. This is the episode where they decided, in what I think was not even remotely a planned turn of events, to say that Carrie and Saul have been working together since the beginning. Well before the season started, in fact, in trying to set up a circumstance that would allow them to get Carrie undercover with the people that were working with the organization that was behind the Langley bombing. And this has been the whole reason why Saul has thrown her under the bus, why Carrie has been in the institution being medicated and going through all this stuff, was so that it could look like she was being thrown out and hung out to dry by the CIA so that this other organization would, for some reason or another, decide that it was a good idea to try to recruit her, for lack of a better term.
Yes, after you've just shown how incredibly unreliable she is, but anyway.
Yes, well, not just that, but so what the writers want us to believe is that she's been aware of this plan all along. She was good with this plan all along. Completely expected everything that was going to happen. Mm-hmm. And yet, in moments when she would not be under any surveillance whatsoever, she showed no indication that she knew what was going to happen.
Yes, exactly.
So how does that work?
Yeah, well, she's too good an actress, or, well... either Claire Danes or Carrie is too good an actress. She just refuses to break character. I don't know. No, it really makes no sense. I mean, this was, completely nonsensical. And you know, I was actually quite honestly, you know, had been getting kind of intrigued about these possibilities of, you know, can her loyalty be turned given, you know, everything she's been through. And it was just kind of that, I mean, that sinking feeling that the moment it was, you know, she showed up at Saul's and it was like, you know, no, the only reason she can be here is, you know, to finally, you know, sweep aside the curtain and let us know that this was all a put up job. And, you know, and yeah, I mean, it just, I think I mentioned in discussing the last episode, I mean, you know, this thing of where, you know, where it's now an open secret that, you know, perhaps, you know, even more than some shows, I mean, they really do make things up as the season goes along. You know, they start these seasons, you know, just getting themselves into a situation and then trying to get out of it. And, you know, yeah, they managed to capture lightning in a bottle in the first season, you know, especially since they intended to kill Brody, and then managed to figure out this, I thought, rather amazing way of keeping him in the show and still keep him relevant. And it just seems to be getting, you know, these situations are becoming more absurd and, you know, far, far more difficult to get out of if this is the way they're going to do it. And, you know, and it really is a shame, because, you know, I really was, you know, getting, you know, at least on the Carrie and Saul end, which has always been the stronger part of the season so far, you know, interested in this possibility of, you know, of Carrie getting a little seduced, given how extreme the situation was, you know, so have it turn into this more conventional direction in such an unbelievable way was just extremely disappointing.
Yeah, and this whole idea of this other organization, I mean, I understand what they're trying to say, what they're trying to imply. The problem with it is, quite frankly, it all depends so much on coincidence, mm-hmm. circumstance, just, you know, contrivance. Just the idea that, okay, so they're putting Carrie through all of this is justified by the highly unlikely chance that exactly the right people are going to come and
right.
try to make her turn on the CIA. And it's so unlikely that it makes perfect sense for her, the first time that they make the deal, for her to completely and utterly deny the possibility. Because, what, they know they're going to come back?
Mm-hmm.
It just all hinges so much on the outcome.
Yeah.
There's no logical flow to it. It's just...
Yes, we know the CIA is decimated, you know, losing that many top level people, you know, but still the idea that, you know, no, this one troubled, you know, flawed agent is naturally going to be the one that they approach is, you know, only works if you just go on the presumption of, you know, and well, no, she's the star of the TV show. That's why they have to approach her. So.
Yeah, precisely. So I'm very disappointed in this. I mean, it just didn't work at all for me on so many levels. But at any rate, so, and then we have the subplot with Dana, which
the teenage runaways. Yes,
yes, the natural born killer of of momentum,
killer of clean linens.
Yes, but you know, so it's one of those deals where I'm watching this and I'm going, okay, all this other stuff is going on, which is completely unbelievable, and then you have the worst subplot. And we're talking with characters that were... I know that I was a little more favorable to it, because maybe I was giving them the benefit of the doubt, but I thought that they at least did some interesting things with Dana, and then they do this, where it's just the most annoying thing. So now there's this, you know, hint that the guy that she's with really is, in fact, bad for her, because he was, you know... a psychotic killer and all this stuff. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Oh yeah. The moment that came up, I mean, especially since he had also, you know, just been on that final season of Dexter as Dexter's protege, who then got tossed away for no good reason. But that's another discussion. but it's kind of like, you know, oh yes, he's on Dexter. Let's just throw in that he might be sort of serial killer-ish, you know, because we never got to finish off that plot over there. So, you know, we'll just reintroduce it over on this other Showtime show.
Oh well, okay. I don't want to belabor this point too much. I gave this one a 6 out of 10. I thought that it was well below average. That was probably even being a little bit nice to it. How about you, Edmund? What would you give?
I mean, just on the basis of, you know, as I say, there was some stuff that I found intriguing early on, but then since all of that was basically torn away by the ending, I'm more than willing to drop it to a 5. You know, this was a bad move for the show, and you know, we will see what happens, but you know, sadly it seems like we are definitely heading more into middle of season 2 direction than season 1 direction.
Yeah, unfortunately. All right, and as we wrap that up, I believe that we actually have Gary joining us tonight.
Yes sir, you do.
Excellent. How are you doing?
Oh, it's been a crazy day today, but I still managed to squeeze my way here.
I hear you. Not an hour ago, I was peeling off the various layers of Ezio off of me again as I was in costume and character for a haunted house for the scouts. So,
oh, you're just addicted at this point, aren't you?
I am addicted. Yes, that's one way of putting it. Hey, you know, I'm going to get the entire house involved if I have to. Speaking of the entire house, if we get any type of noisy interruption from four-legged friends, it's because the dog decided to come downstairs. At least one of them did, anyhow.
Okay.
All right, let's see then. We're going to go ahead and go back to what was our original planned opening here, and that would be, let's see, Gary, I'm sure you're up to date on The Walking Dead, right?
Brains. Yes, I am.
Excellent, excellent. Is that a little cough I hear in the background? Anyway, let's go ahead and run the promo.
Hyundai presents this season on The Walking Dead.
Come on back now!
We have to keep this place going.
Go! Get out of here!
There's not a lot of us left.
You don't fire unless you absolutely need to.
I can't let you do this.
The governor, who are you still looking for?
You shoot or you run.
Go to the left!
Jammed up!
For more video, go to amc.com.
All right, and that is The Walking Dead, Season 4, Episode 2, Infected. A brand new enemy has the group fighting to protect the life they've built at the prison. Well, that's putting it mildly. Oh, Gary, since you just joined us, why don't you go ahead and jump in first? What was your takeaway from this episode?
It still struck me like this whole flu, plague, whatever the heck you want to call it, seemed to hit awfully fast. You know, especially given their confined environment that they're in, I had a hard time suspending my disbelief to accept it. But if I can put that aside for a moment, you know, we had some really interesting moments here. I enjoyed the throngs of zombies. While this again made me suspend my disbelief, I still found it interesting that all these zombies are finding their way to this prison. What kind of radar sense do they have to continue to find it? I guess they have plutonium sense or something along those lines. That being said, I think this is the point where I jumped the gun last week when I started talking about Michonne and the baby. Yes. And so I will reuse my comments and insert it here with the fact of, I had a hard time sort of taking this turn. You know, we think about the hardships that we've seen her go through and been unable to overcome. And now, you know, we've always had a sense that there was some loss about her, but now I guess I assume this is nailing it down. And it was a lost child that sort of changed her or turned her more so than just having to live in this zombified world. It just seemed to strike me out of left field. Like, I didn't see it coming. I really didn't feel like there was a lead up to it. Maybe there couldn't be, and maybe that was their point, but I would have appreciated, you know, a little bit more than just, oh, I don't want to be around kids. I would have liked a little bit more build up to it than sort of laying it out, or at least how I think they laid it out. I'm trying to think what anything else other than that. That was probably the biggest thing. For me, what was your highlight?
Well, Edmund, I'll let you go ahead and jump in first.
Yeah. I guess the thing that kind of got to me, I was a little bit surprised of the Michonne stuff as well. And, you know, I think, you know, maybe this is them, trying to make up for, you know, what I think was, you know, some of the work that they didn't do that well when she was first introduced, you know, because in terms of, you know, her armless companions, which, you know, even though, you know, I wasn't reading the books, you know, I wasn't like, you know, being, you know, religious about, you know, not picking up spoilers and things and, you know, sort of hearing that, you know, no, that, you know, that was her, I believe, her brother and boyfriend. And, you know, they never really kind of established that in the show itself. So, you know, whether, you know, they could have been, you know, setting up some of that background of loss and the way she deals with it. And, you know, it's like, you know, it's almost like, you know, they're trying to, you know, use that wonderful comic term, you know, retcon things a little bit now. And it didn't make much sense to me. You know, but as far as in terms of some of the action in the episode, I mean, that whole opening with Karen walking around and sort of You know, sort of almost having, you know, that sort of classic horror, you know, slasher film feel, you know, where you know the bad guy's there, and you know, when's he going to jump out, and then you know, winding up being a little bit of misdirection, where no, you do have the you know, the massive fight, and sort of the you know, yeah, the thinning out of the cannon fodder from Woodbury, and you know, and of course, you know, Karen being, you know, spared at that point, you know, just to meet the far, far more sinister and potentially scary demise at the end. You know, with the you know, all those implications of, you know, how much division is, you know, is actually setting in among, you know, among the prisoners. And I guess the whole thing with the walkers at the fence, you know, that as well, I felt that they were sort of, you know, they weren't doing a, you know, yes, there was the whole thing with the, you know, the rat, and, you know, apparently, you know, somebody apparently, you know, luring them there, you know, but it still didn't seem like, you know, like that would be enough to necessarily bring them in those numbers. You know, so yeah, so I feel like, you know, there is some background stuff that they're not setting up as well. You know, while, you know, yeah, some of the, you know, the zombie killing action is going quite well, but they're not doing as well in sort of, you know, I think, you know, part of it is juggling this larger cast and all these different elements and trying to introduce them, but you know, hopefully they can get a better handle on that, you know, especially as ranks get thinned and presumably the lines get better drawn.
Clearly I was more favorable towards this than the two of you were. I thought that this was the natural next step after the premiere. It did make sense to me to a certain extent that given the world that they live in and the, I guess, breeding ground for disease that is out there, that sooner or later something was going to mutate into something that virulent, and it wouldn't take long before a group that's concentrated as they were would turn up with some kind of problem like this. I mean, I think it was probably only thematically the point that Woodbury was quote-unquote healthy was mm-hmm. to give that kind of false veneer of the, you know, utopia or idyllic society. But let's face it, you've got a lot of people in a small area. You've got to try and feed them all. Sooner or later something's going to happen, and we know there are things out there that would kill somebody off that fast. I mean, we know there are certain types of meningitis, for instance, that mimic the flu, but after 24 hours, where the flu you would just feel like crap, kills you with meningitis. So I mean, there are diseases that do that, and it seems to just have been a matter of timing, but it was also well timed in order to deliver this whole theme of what are you willing to do, or what choices do you have to make in order to survive, and how do you live with those choices. And I thought that it was obvious that things were going to go very, very wrong as soon as he turned, and sure enough, that's exactly what happened. They didn't hold back on that. They didn't make it that he only killed one or two people. It was swiftly became a massacre.
Mm-hmm.
And a pretty horrible one, for that matter. But at the same time, I'm looking at the whole situation that, Gary, you brought up of all those walkers at the fence, and I'm trying to read between the lines somewhat. That yes, part of it is that you've got people, you know, the kid feeding the one that, you know, the special one named Nick, who had a name tag or whatever else, and does that help to explain a little bit? But I'm looking at it and I'm saying, okay, well, they've been there for months and the fences have held, and now they are coming in such numbers that they are starting to challenge the defenses of the prison, which is not something that was the case before. So I'm wondering if they are slowly foreshadowing that the number of walkers in the area is increasing, and if this is not the leading edge of something, if you get the idea of that, mm-hmm. right? That the density is starting to increase. So you've got a lot more people in the prison, and quite frankly, I don't know how well they're how well disciplined they are. I get the feeling that they're not that well disciplined at all, as far as being relatively quiet when they're outdoors, and you know, noise is going to attract.
Sure.
So I'm thinking it's more it's kind of like a combination thing. I think there's a lot going on here that's going to slowly but surely make itself known as far as why this is becoming more of an issue and it wasn't before. And it might even explain, you know, again, if the dead are a breeding ground for disease, that if there is, you know, a growing density of walkers out there and they just haven't found that yet, that maybe this is again another sign that that's what's coming.
Right. Yeah, that's one of the potential additional disease vectors.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Because we know that some of the walkers had the blood on their face, just like what was his name, the one who died?
Patrick,
right. He had the same exact pattern on his, you know, the blood all from the eyes, the ears, and everything, right. And the nose. So people out there have died of this already.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if they turn into a walker, are they still a carrier? You know, who knows?
Yeah.
I'm just throwing these things out there. I don't know. It's not from the book that I remember.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's a good question, because as they're, you know, killing the zombies, there's often blood splatter and things like that. So,
right, exactly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I've been wondering about that. I mean, kind of from the beginning, in terms of when or if that's going to become a factor. But
well, yeah, look at them when they were at the dealing with the throng at the fence. Mm-hmm. And they're right there, you know, 2 feet away, just splattering stuff everywhere. And mm-hmm. I was thinking that myself. I was like, don't you think maybe it would be a good idea to cover up?
Mm-hmm. Masks, at least.
Yeah, exactly. But I understand why they don't do it as a practical matter for the show. But, you know, it just raises the question, could they be carrying stuff that they don't know they're carrying?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as you were discussing all that, this is probably too out there, but... You know, the other thing that I hadn't thought about, Phil, you were mentioning why the buildup is, you know, of course, we don't know where the governor wound up, and, you know, could he be somehow hurting zombies towards them?
Oh, that would be brilliant, and I love it.
Yeah, that had crossed my mind as well. Yeah, actually, I was like, well, how are they all getting here? It can't be accidental.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, again, this also begs the question, what if he came across animal life that was contaminated?
Right.
And kind of dropped it off.
Yeah.
Nearby.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, scorching the earth, so to speak.
Sure.
Poisoning the well.
Yeah.
That is not outside of the realm of possibility, but at the same time, I don't know that it's a necessary factor.
No,
but it is a tantalizing one. You know, that's the thing, is that for everything that's going on, I just try and think of, okay, if there isn't an obvious reason, what could be the rationale behind it? Because mm-hmm. they've done that before in the third season. Obviously, that's the one that I was watching in real time versus going back and catching up. But they did that a couple times, where there were things that seemed like they came out of nowhere, and then they came back and there was something going on in the background.
Right.
So. At any rate, Bronstam apparently agreed with me with this episode because he gave it an 8 out of 10, and that's actually what I would have given it. So, Edmund, how about you?
Yeah, and this may seem like backtracking, but not really. It was just I was going over my negative stuff first. But I think overall I would still give it an 8 out of 10 because, I mean, you know, I had certain things that were bugging me a bit, but especially the thing with the rat. I mean, if it's in the realm of, you know, yes, we're going to show you this thing, which really couldn't be enough to do this because really there's something else doing it. You know, that I'm perfectly fine with that. So, and also there was the part we hadn't mentioned, but sort of the increase, Carol's little, school of, how to bring the youngins up right in the zombie apocalypse, which was, rather good as well. The continuation from her knife lesson of the previous episode. So yeah, I'm actually comfortable with an 8 out of 10 as well.
And Gary?
I guess I'll be the one then. I'm going to give this thing a 6. I had a lot of problems with it. The only thing I could guess is that we're just dealing with a lot of setup, but at the same time, they sprung stuff without setup. If this episode fell apart for me.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, you gave your reasons, so I'm not going to argue with you too much, but yeah. You know, I'm sure there are people that feel very similar out there. It seems to be a polarizing show, even this season, where it seemed to... we liked the premiere, and then I know there was a lot of negativity towards the premiere, so... that said, I'm very much looking forward to where they go from here. Maybe we'll see some answers to the questions that you're asking, but we'll find out. Alright, let's go ahead and switch gears a little bit to another show that has people very polarized these days, and that would be Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And let's go ahead and run the promo.
You have a gift. Why not show the world?
Next Tuesday, creating a hero.
One dose and you'll feel incredible.
Means playing with fire.
Now let's see what you can do.
One of their own.
Since the moment you stepped foot on this plane, you've been lying.
Will be branded a traitor.
I'm done with you.
Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. All new next Tuesday at 8/7 Central on ABC.
All right, and that would be Season 1, Episode 5, Girl in the Flower Dress. Agent Coulson and the team head to Asia to rescue a young man with an extraordinary power, and a mysterious girl in a flower dress may be able to help them on their journey. Meanwhile, a secret jeopardizes Skye's relationship with the other agents. And who wrote this? Because that just tripped me up, because I don't think that was actually a good...
No.
Well, anyway, Edmund, maybe give us a little bit better insight into this.
Yeah, well, I mean, certainly, you know, they were sort of, yeah, I mean, it is mentioning the two threads, but yeah, we were sort of getting a little more insight into how S.H.I.E.L.D.'s been operating, having this guy in Hong Kong with this ability to make fire, basically, and discovering that, you know, yeah, they do have some programs in place to sort of monitor people like this, and, you know, so it, you know, also brings brings Agent May into it, and with Agent Chang in Hong Kong, and some nice bilingual stuff going on there, and then it's this mysterious girl in the flower dress who takes a shine to our nascent superhero, and winds up making him the deal he can't refuse to basically turn him into a superhero, which all seems a little hokey, which makes sense since it's all a setup to drain him to make extremists work, and then of course that's offset by as they're investigating everything, and Sky thinks she's being all super secret agent-y and not letting them know that she really knows all about the hacker they're going after. We have Agent May being extremely badass as usual, discovering her in her little love nest, and it's been kind of my ongoing theme in terms of the way they've been dealing with Sky, and what is the deal with actually trusting a rising tide activist, and actually like the way they brought it all to a head, this quickly. I mean, there's been sort of hints of it, but then it's like, oh no, she's just pretending to sell them out to get close to the billionaire industrialist, but then the way they turned it around, I did actually like the way they did it in terms of it being, that she's not really with either side. She just wants to find her parents, which is a bit of a comic book trope. But I think works in this case as a way of keeping her around, even those still with the shiny bracelet. So it's not like they're suddenly turning around and saying, oh yes, we trust you after you just, tried to go completely behind our backs for all this time. So I thought overall this was a good solid episode, and did help move a lot of things forward, and at the same time, I know people who didn't quite necessarily quite understand what S.H.I.E.L.D. is say, there's new superheroes. It's like, okay, now we got some superhero type action anyway. Even if he didn't quite have full control over everything. So.
Well, yeah, and I have to say that, we heard the promo right before this. They did a really nice job of making it seem like something very different was going to happen than what actually happened in the episode. And I'm kind of thankful that they did, because it was so cheesy the way that they were implying it was going to play out. This was a lot more fun. To actually have her real motivations be put forward so quickly. And let's face it, people might react. Really? Was it that quick? It's the fifth episode. And we basically know where she stands.
Mm-hmm.
Every episode has been making progress here. It hasn't been lingering over too much. If anything, it's been layering things in so that we get answers, but it then points us to the next question, which in this case is, what's the deal with her parents? And what did S.H.I.E.L.D. have to do with it?
Yeah.
It kind of plays into that whole thing that we were talking about, is that, what is S.H.I.E.L.D. up to that they shouldn't be up to, that this team is going to find out about? That's where it all seems to be heading right now. Mm-hmm. At the same time, you've got this whole organization out there that we see the next level of what was introduced in the series premiere. And they take out the one doctor, which I'm kind of annoyed at because I like Shannon Lucio.
That surprised me too. I had the sense that they were going to have her as an ongoing protagonist.
Oh yeah.
So that sort of stunned me. Not the I'm devastated. I was so emotionally connected to the character. Just that, wow, you actually took time to start to build the villain side a little bit more, and you've just wiped it clean.
Yeah. Well, in the process, and
then she got scorched.
Yeah. I was going to say, yeah, up in front.
I had to do it at least once.
Yeah. Boy, they burned us on that one. But in the process, they introduce the next, I guess, the manager. to me, it's just slowly but surely we're moving up the chain, and we're going to discover the the true organization behind all of this. And, you know, I'm sure that there are some people out there that are expecting, you know, oh, it's going to end up being Hydra or, you know, AIM or...
Oh, yeah, my money's on AIM. I would really like AIM.
My money is on that it's just another part of S.H.I.E.L.D. But that would
are we really do you really want to break those seals open right now during this episode review, John?
I don't want anyone coming after me, but you know, there's a lot of possibilities, let's just put it that way. I mean Hydra would be the one to go with from a historical perspective. Hydra was the first organization that was introduced when S.H.I.E.L.D. had their own side or material in Strange Tales back in the day.
Yes.
So that would be thematically logical, but I feel like that would be almost too easy to go with them. So I'm hoping that they come up with something else. But I do like the fact that every episode is building on what we've already seen. Gary, how about you? Any additional ideas or?
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, I liked the episode as it was set up, and it was a premise. I was a little disappointed that Scorch didn't turn out to be a known character, as I'll call it. You know, he would be like, you know, someone from the universe. There is a Japanese hero who shoots fire called Sunfire, and that's who I was expecting him to be, honestly, as it was going on. And I was a little disappointed that they made up a character from scratch when they have an existing character. Actually, probably have a few existing characters. I'm surprised that they need to create new ones. I think it'd be a nice homage to, as you talk about, you know, S.H.I.E.L.D. history and stuff like that, to, you know, take advantage of the breadth of the Marvel Universe and bring in some of these characters that maybe people might identify with or be interested in, to go back and discover who they were, you know. And so I'm that's disappointing to me. That being said, I love the ongoing plot line about trying to get a new version of the super soldier formula going. This idea that, you know, his abilities would prevent a burnout from happening because it'd be adapted to it. It made a quasi-scientific bit of sense to it. So I enjoyed that a lot. As far as the whole sky thing, I would assume that something with a S.H.I.E.L.D. with all their resources would have pretty much hacked out her whole life by now and you know, known that there was some issue with her parents that hadn't been resolved of some kind, or that she had made some inquiries about their existence, something along those lines. So that sort of was like a, oh, okay, yes, we admitted that the whole plot thing is a bit comic bookish or, you know, cheesy in that sense, but at the same time, I still find it hard to believe that Coulson was that much in the dark when he was standing there basically laying down the ultimatum on her that he didn't know where it was going.
And that's why I think that there's the possibility that there's some other side to S.H.I.E.L.D. that is keeping information from them.
Yeah.
That there's something else going on, because it seems sloppy for a Josh show to have this kind of glaring lack of communication. But yeah, that it seems like that's where it could be going. As far as the whole Sunfire thing, I actually thought about that too, because this is really the second time, because I know that we all thought, oh, hey, you know, August Richards and his character in the premiere would have been a perfect way to introduce Luke Cage, for instance. But at the same time, I know that Joss has said, and the writers have said, even independently of that, what they don't want to get into is a pattern of, you know, the cameo or Marvel character of the week.
Mm-hmm. Well, I understand that, but at the same time, they are having characters of the week, number one. Number two, do you think the average person really knows who Sunfire is?
No, but...
Well, that's my point. There's so many second, third, and fourth level characters that might actually genuinely sort of dovetail back in where interest would be drawn, where people would want to learn more about the character. There'd be some little, oh, they were in this episode. Then, you know, it would feed comic book sales from Comixology or something like that. You know, they have this universe, but they seem to be wanting to play at the very edge of it.
Yeah, and that may be intentional, because I have a feeling And we'll see if this turns out to be true. My prediction is that because we know that there is the Thor film coming up in just a couple weeks, and then in April, there is the Captain America Winter Soldier film.
Oh, sweet heavens, that looks beautiful.
Right? Wouldn't it make sense, given that S.H.I.E.L.D. is going to have some degree of interaction with at least one of those films, if not both, in some way, shape, or form, that they might be saving their overlap into the larger Marvel Universe for very well-timed kind of responses to things that have happened in the films?
That might be possible, although I can't think of a single instance where that type of crossover has really happened, can you?
No, but that's where the very unusual relationship between the film and television sides of the Marvel Disney relationship come into play.
I suppose, but if they don't even want to use a character like Sunfire, then how, but yet they want to merge the TV show with the series?
I will. Here's the caveat as far as the Sunfire thing goes. Sunfire is more attached to the X-Men universe than to Avengers / S.H.I.E.L.D.
Right.
And I can see that being more of an issue there, because that, you know, the one big problem that they have right now, I guess, if you want to call it a problem, is that there are certain sides of the Marvel franchise that they're not even allowed to reference because the rights are owned by other studios. Like, they can't talk about mutants because that infringes on the people who hold the rights to the X-Men franchise. So they've got to kind of thread the needle a little bit. Like, if they have Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch in Avengers 2, they're going to have to figure out how to do that without making reference to how they might play in with the X-Men universe. This has already been part of the problem that they've been trying to resolve for months about whether or not they're going to have those characters in the next film. So that, I can kind of see them not wanting to go there. Plus, at the same time, I mean, they are establishing their own kind of mythos in the films and in the show. So I don't know how much they really feel the need to mine characters just to throw them out there. But I do feel like if something happens in Thor: The Dark World, that it would make sense for Coulson or somebody else to follow up on something, even indirectly. Maybe have Kat Dennings' character make a cameo, or, you know, what's his name, the scientist that was in the first film. So, you know, something along those lines. But that's the kind of thing that I think would work. And certainly, some of the implications that there's stuff going on in the Captain America film involved with S.H.I.E.L.D. and some things that they may be, or may not be doing that they shouldn't be, it makes sense for that to intersect in some way. And it just so happens that, you know, the Thor stuff comes right at the beginning of Sweeps Month. What a perfect time to have a mini event, so to speak, on S.H.I.E.L.D. So, I don't know. There's lots of possibilities there. I don't let that really hang up too much. I mean, I did note when I saw the things, I was like, oh, I wonder if this is going to be, you know, so-and-so who would be Sunfire. And then I thought to myself, that doesn't necessarily make sense.
So. Yeah, although, like you said, I mean, we talked about it, and it's worth mentioning the Captain America trailer, I guess you'd call it, that recently came out, and I will refer everyone to Edmund's wonderful spoiler message as I continue on with this. And, you know, it shows, as far as I can tell, it's basically, you know, Captain America fighting against S.H.I.E.L.D. or at least some faction of S.H.I.E.L.D. And I immediately wondered, how is that going to impact the series? Are they going to ignore it completely? Are they going to play into and on it? It doesn't seem like they're setting up the S.H.I.E.L.D. series at this time to be a on the run type of hiding around while still trying to get your job done show. They just seem so lockstepped into resources and abilities that I don't know that I would want the show to go into outlaw mode just yet.
Well, we're only 5 episodes into the season 2.
Yeah,
they've got a lot of ground that they could cover.
By the time
Yeah, by the time we get to the spring, I mean, yeah, some of these.
I know. I just, I kind of like all the gadgets and the, you know, the, oh, well, we bring us a new plane type of thing. You know, I like hardware once in a while. I don't want to see them tying together, you know, two vines to make something.
Yeah, well,
I'd rather see some hydraulically actuated something or other, but that's just me.
Although Colton and May seem pretty damn well connected, so I think even if they have to go on the run, they'll figure something out.
As long as May gets to keep those black leather outfits, I'm perfectly fine. Yeah.
They might have to go out of uniform.
And so long as they can keep the bus, I mean, you've already got a plane with with two wings and six engines, and I still haven't figured out what the back ones are for, but anyway.
To look pretty, of course.
That's right. Yeah. Although, damn it.
And I know we didn't mention it that much, but I loved when Sky was getting ready to leave and May opened the, she opened the door and May's right there with clothes.
Oh, yeah.
That was great. That was a great scene.
So, Gary, what would you give this one, do you think?
I'm going to give it an 8. I thought they did a really good job of moving the continuing storyline up. It had some cute character moments, but I still saw, you know, I would have preferred the named character, and this whole they don't know much about Sky seems a little flat for me. So, okay. An 8.
And Edmund?
I'll give it a solid 8 as well. I mean, it was basically moving everything along, and I did like the way they managed to pull off this guy's storyline, you know, yeah, without being as, you know, as you mentioned, you know, as obvious as the trailer was.
Mm-hmm. Let's see here. I am trying to find what we should do next, and I think we have enough time to do this since it would be Gary and I that would be talking about it. Let's go ahead and switch over to Haven, and here is the promo.
Friday on All New Haven.
There are forces at play here you don't understand.
We got a troubled person that can do this.
We got a much bigger problem.
How much time is left?
5, 4, 3, 2, 3!
Haven, an original series, only next Friday at 10, part of Sci-Fi's 31 Days of...
All right, and that is Haven Season 4, Episode 6, Countdown. A trouble that turns dreams into deadly nightmares plagues the residents of Haven. At the same time, Duke finds himself in a difficult situation dealing with his pain-in-the-neck brother. That's one way of putting it. Wow, this one was a bit of a surprise. This is one that took a trouble of the week, made it seem like that was going to be the extent of it. That and the kind of debate over what was going on with Audrey/Lexi and what Nathan was going to learn. And then in the last act or so, it completely just took a left turn that wasn't necessarily out of nowhere, I guess, but it certainly happened faster than I thought it was going to. Gary, what do you think about this episode?
I agree. They sort of set up the the trouble of the week, but then really it wasn't the focus of it that we expected it to be. I enjoyed the fact that they were still trying, at least at the beginning, to have Audrey hide who she was, but you know, it couldn't stay hidden for long. And I enjoy the issues that it's causing with the guard. I don't want to say it muddles everything up, but it certainly makes it more interesting. We thought they were headed out on this, you know, Audrey's gone, this new person, you know, we're starting from scratch all over again, but really we're pretty much right in the thick in the middle of everything, and their reset really didn't reset anything. It just made everything worse.
Yeah, what I find pretty interesting here is that as much as it's Audrey that's back, and that did irritate me that she came back, what they really underscore here in this episode, and I think it's something that's going to be important going forward, is that for all that it is Audrey that's back, Lexi's in there too.
Yeah, that was a little bit of an odd thing, you know, early on in the episode when she's, you know, fooling around about the drink, was it the coffee being spiked and stuff like that, and she's talking to Duke about, you know, how Lexi's still in there with her, and so it's interesting. I wonder if we're going to have any sort of lapses or other sort of hokey mixed identity stuff along the way. I don't see how being Lexi necessarily benefits her at this point, so it'll be interesting to see how they sort of don't talk about it or continue to try and work it into the storyline.
I guess what it implies to me, and I'm wondering if they're going to go here or not, is that because the typical process did not take place, that means that Audrey is the primary part of her personality, but it's not, she has parts or the memories or whatever, some kind of part of every identity that she's ever had is in there somewhere.
I don't know. You heard the newspaper brothers talk about how they tried to bring things back out in the past and it never worked. And maybe if the process did complete, it is a clean slate at that point.
Yeah, but it didn't. So.
So this time it didn't. But as far as getting back her, some of the older personalities, like Emily or something like that, I don't see that happening.
But it just seems odd that any part of Lexi is in there when, what it, I guess in another way it implies maybe that we don't really understand the process of how the personality and memories get imprinted onto whoever Audrey really is. You know what I mean? Because
You know, it made me curious. You know, when we had the Lexi character introduced, and you know, see her as basically, you know, sort of like a, I'll say, you know, bartender server type person, and I'm thinking, who picks what she becomes? Does she decide it herself? Was that maybe like, you know, Duke had the bar, so she wanted to, like, you know, be with him, so that's her personality sort of saying what she wants to be next? I have a lot of different thoughts ran through my head with that one.
But I guess, too, is we know from past seasons that there is an actual Audrey Parker. And her memories, at the very least, her memories, if not parts of her personality, were like the template for the Audrey we know. So, who was Lexi? Who was, you know, Sarah before? And who was Lucy before? And all this stuff. And it's like, okay, where does that come from? And what dictates how that merges with whoever Audrey really is?
And not only that, at this point, with the barn gone and, you know, the avatar gone, avatar of the barn or whatever you want to call them, how are we going to find out about it?
Right.
You know, it doesn't seem as if there's any real touchstone left, because it was pretty much the, you know, and it, you know, the ends of itself, you know, there was never really any outside involvement that we're aware of at this point that they've written that tied anything back to it. It was the origin and the end. So I don't know if they're going to let that fade out or they will keep bringing it up.
Yeah, it's really. And then I think, I know it didn't happen in this episode, and I was a little bit wary of that, that now that we know that it's Audrey, what about Jennifer? What's her connection to all this? Like, was she a potential source for Audrey's next incarnation or something? Like, why is she connected to the barn at all? How does that work? There's obviously, these are all ways that they're going to dig into the mysteries around all this. Even though the barn doesn't necessarily exist anymore, that doesn't mean that we're not going to get some kind of answer about it, because there's other ways to approach it.
Yeah, they could time travel again.
Yeah, there we go. We can see who can become whose father this time. But, I mean, in the meantime, we've got this whole thing where Jordan has this plan. I'm going to activate Duke's brother to use as a weapon against Nathan or whatever. And, boy, did that not go well at all. Talk about your really bad plans and getting what you wish for. I think it's a little unfortunate. I mean, Jordan, I thought as a character, got a real raw deal. I thought she had potential last season, and they kind of shifted her over into a somewhat one-note villain character, and then she wound up being cannon fodder. Again, it's, you know, she got what she was looking for, You know, now Wade has the ability. What I'm kind of curious about is that clearly this is something that they warned, you know, what was it, Vince was warning Duke earlier in the season that you need to get your brother out of there before he becomes a problem, so on and so forth. Well, now he's a problem. What's Duke going to have to do to deal with this? And I'm curious, what happens if, given the nature of the trouble, what happens if they go after each other and one takes the other out? Does that, you know, what does that do to the ability? I mean, it's kind of like recursive there. So I'm wondering if this is, again, a way for them to explore how these abilities work, why this is kind of an unusual moment in the whole cycle, and so on. But anyway, any other thoughts that you had for this particular episode?
No, I think we covered it all.
Okay. That's perfectly fine. I gave this one I think I gave it a 7 out of 10 now that I... But I thought it was a little bit scattered. I didn't quite get, you know, some of the... I don't think it was quite as coherent as it has been in the past. How about you? What were your thoughts? What would you give it?
Yeah, it seemed like they... It's like taking a turn from what they had started off the season with. And I guess a 7's fair. There was a lot of stuff thrown in here. And as I said, I really felt it was changing the plot of the series, or at least this season. So I'll go the 7.
And just to reiterate, I mean, part of the reason why I gave it a 7 was that even though I liked some of the things that they did, I thought that Jordan got, you know, like I said, a bit of a raw deal as far as her fate. And this whole Audrey thing...
Well, I'm still upset about that, yeah. But I realize it's not changing, so I'll just suck it up at this point and not complain as much as I did last weekend.
I will say this, though. At least they're not playing it like the conventional love triangle type idea. I like the fact that, you know, the whole stuff with Duke and Nathan in this episode was actually pretty good. I thought that they played that out really well, because it wasn't jealousy so much as... When Nathan asked Duke, you know, or called out the fact that Duke was in love with Audrey, it wasn't an accusation so much as a good, I'm glad that you are, so that if this doesn't work out, someone can be there for her. And I thought that was a really nice touch, especially given how the two characters started off at the beginning of the series, really being in an antagonistic type of relationship, that this really, to me, showed how far they've come in the last 4 seasons. And it's good to see that kind of character growth. So that kind of mitigated some of my annoyance on other ends.
I'm glad it did for you.
Well, I had to take something. I guess you didn't like it quite as much, but okay. So you said a 7, yes? Or did I?
Yes, I give it a 7, yeah.
Okay. All right, well, I think we're going to go ahead and wrap this particular episode up here, and we're going to pick up with the rest of the shows that we need to cover next time. Thank you, gentlemen, for all your help for this episode. And definitely, if you want to give us some comments, you can follow us on Twitter at Critical Myth, or you can go and like our page on Facebook. Again, that's Critical Myth.
You can give us feedback by visiting the website over at www.criticalmyth.com. Just check out the entries for the show and leave us a comment. If you can't find it, just go all the way up to the top of the page. There's a link there, and there is also a drop-down box for all of the shows we talk about. So please let us know what you think.
Or you can go over to the VOG Network page and go over to the forums, and we have a dedicated forum for this show. You can leave comments there for us.
You can also email your feedback to feedback@criticalmyth.com, or you can leave us a review on iTunes.
Or you can call our Google voicemail line at 908-977-MYTH. That's 908-977-6984.
And don't forget that Critical Myth's use of any and all copyright material is only intended for parody, news analysis, critique, or for educational purposes, as provided within United States Code Title 17, also known as the Fair Use Act. Please don't sue us.
And the comments and opinions of the Critical Myth podcasters and reviewers are not necessarily those of its distributors, partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. So until next time...